This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. Today on the show, controversy in Solomon Islands after the government decides to shorten the school year because of the Pacific Games.
I feel that it will cause a very big disruption in terms of planning and also effective delivery of the syllabus.
And Pacific art turns digital. It was first seen as a way to negotiate the pandemic, but now more artists in the region are making their work in virtual reality.
We are going to be moving towards NFTs and a digital space.
And the judges have gone through the hundreds of songs submitted to Pacific Break, the music competition here at ABC Australia. Finally, we have a winner. We find out who they are here on Pacific Beat later in the show. Stick around for that. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. So glad to have your company. First, though, Papua New Guineans want answers from the government after a UN report revealed the country's population could be as high as 17 million. And as Jordan Fennell reports, health and justice workers say they're concerned about what this means for PNG women.
For Emma Minimbi, a PNG lawyer who works with rural communities, the revelation that PNG's population could be double its current known figure didn't come as a surprise.
This could actually be true if you look at how quickly the population is increasing, especially through very, very young children having children. It doesn't seem like a far-fetched number.
Current estimates put PNG's population at around 9 million, but a new UN report that has not been publicly released predicts that it could be almost double that. At a press conference, Prime Minister James Marape said the PNG government is unsure of what the true population number is.
From my own estimations at the National Statistics Office, we thought the number could be any number between 9 to 10, 11 million. UN has put the number at 17 million. I think gist of that assessment is the fact that our population is growing.
Emma says the government's lack of population awareness shows that many PNG citizens have been neglected.
Government focuses a little bit too much on Port Moresby, and there's not enough service delivery trickling down to other places or other parts of the country. And you've got populations and people living here that have never had, you know, a service that comes directly to them, like maybe a road, a hospital. And so a lot of these people are forgotten.
Mr. Marape was voted into power in August this year in a general election that was mired in corruption and controversy. Many of PNG's eligible voters were left off the common roll and unable to cast a ballot. Emma Minimbi says she's worried that if the UN's population prediction is right, it could have big implications for the country's democracy.
A lot of people that didn't have that opportunity to vote, you know, their representatives into parliament, because we know that, well, we didn't vote you in. You know, who are you representing when you're making these decisions, when you're making these policies?
And with a parliament where female MPs make up less than 2% of members, she says many more women could be left unrepresented.
These are women that will, unless the government does something about it, be forgotten for time. Like, they will be in their rural villages, rural communities, without ever having been directly engaged by the government. Yeah, that really worries me.
Until the report is fully revealed, the accuracy of it is up for debate. According to the Australian newspaper, the report was funded by the Australian government and undertaken by the United Nations Population Fund using methods that included satellite data. Speaking to The Guardian, the United Nations Development Program Assistant Secretary General Kani Wignaraja said the PNG population estimate came from a draft study. In Anga Province, Dr. Betty Carco says in a country where data is already hard to source, it's critical for healthcare workers to know if that number is correct.
Population figure is very important for me, for population health. I must know the number of population that I am serving in public health so that we make sure that number of population is healthy. We must know how many people are getting sick. We have to help people to empower them to become healthy and take ownership of their own health.
Papua New Guinea's last census was in 2011, and its most recent attempt to collect national data in 2021 was postponed because of COVID-19. Mr. Marape says the new census will be held next year.
We have put money aside for full census in 23 and 24. We'll do a deep look into our population to do exactly the headcounts that is required, as well as not just the headcount, but to understanding of our people who live throughout our country.
But Dr. Betty Carco says that wait is too long for the health sector, and she wants to see action from the government as soon as possible.
Well, I think we should start one sooner. 2020, beginning of 2023 would be good.
That was Dr. Betty Carco speaking to reporter Jordan Fennell. Now to Solomon Islands, where a government decision to shorten the 2023 academic year has been met with criticism and concern. Parents say students are still catching up from COVID-19 disruptions, and a shorter year will hamper their learning. But as Chris and Rita Amanu-Leong reports, the government says the closure is because of next year's specific games, during which schools will play a critical role.
Schools in Solomon Islands were shut down for two-thirds of this year because of a national COVID-19 outbreak. Now the government is planning to close schools 5 weeks early next year.
The main reason for having the school calendar for 2023 to end or close on the 27th of October is because of the Pacific Games 2023. That's the main reason. There are no other reasons but the Pacific Games. The Ministry of Education senior management team made that decision collectively, and we made that decision given the fact that by the 19th of November 2023 the Pacific Games will officially open. If you look at it, the Solomon's government is very proud to host the Pacific Games. And all the ministries under the Solomon's government are required to support the DCGA in this undertaking.
Supervising Permanent Secretary for Education James Bosamata says the teaching curriculum will remain unaffected.
Learning or the time for the 2023 academic calendar will be shortened. However, because of this big event, the Pacific Games, the education authorities and the school principals and teachers will be advised how the teachers should cover the curriculum, should cover the syllabus, so that the students won't lose marks, although the timing is shorter than a normal school calendar.
In Honiara, there's mixed feelings on the streets of the capital.
It's okay, but for form, for us, form two, we will become form three next year. So might be hard for us to go through with them some education lessons that we will take next year.
We don't have much like weeks and months so that we could have our classes.
I think I'm happy with the early break because some students play in the Pacific Games.
While the Education Ministry says the curriculum will be unaffected, provincial teacher Lukmai Fiti thinks differently.
Yeah, I feel that it will cause a very big disruption in terms of planning and also effective delivery of the syllabus. Well, in terms of the facilities prepared and also established in different schools in the country, I don't think so. Just because currently, like, the government is putting a plan, yeah? But then in terms of facility to speed up the work, in terms of the technology today, we get an instance. We don't have, yeah? We don't have the materials that will to allow students learn effectively within the given period of 35 weeks.
He doesn't think the Pacific Games warrant a major disruption to the academic year.
They might say that it's good just because of the first time in history to have these Pacific Games. But then in terms of learning, I think the teachers will not deliver to the best that they could. The quicker plans to reduce the different areas within curriculum has not been made. So the 35 weeks has not been properly considered. From the experiences, like for example, we take for the pandemic. There are some areas for other schools, yeah, like those in the remote provinces, they don't cover those curriculum areas, but they are assessed for. So it will have, certainly we have disruption on the examination next year.
But the Education Ministry insists that the Pacific Games are a national event. Therefore, students too should be there, even as spectators.
So when the students and teachers from all over the country come and be part of the games, for whatever reason, maybe as a spectator, or maybe as a host school, or maybe as a games village, we will reflect the theme for the games, and that is challenge, celebrate, we will celebrate together, and of course unite. We will be united as a country.
Out of Honiara in the Solomon Islands, that report was from Chris and Rita Amanu Leung. Now, as you wake up this Thursday morning, maybe make yourself some breakfast, grab a coffee, you're probably wondering to yourself, what is the news of the region? Well, we have you covered here on Pacific Beat, because we're about to find out the updates thanks to reporter Carl Evans. Good morning, Carl.
That's the best introduction I've ever had. Thank you.
No worries. I'm trying to mix up here. And it seems like New Caledonia is also mixing things up, because the government there is looking at relaxing education requirements to allow healthcare professionals from outside Europe to practice. Now, this is a strange one. Does that mean that only healthcare professionals from within Europe are now able to work in New Caledonia?
Yeah, that's exactly what it means. It's what it did mean anyway. That might change depending on what happens with this proposal that has actually been put forth to the New Caledonian Congress, and that is to lift the condition which only allows healthcare professionals from Europe to work within the territory. So this could alleviate some healthcare shortages, which is obviously being felt across the Pacific and across the world at the moment. And it's reported by La Première. And at the moment, it's a requirement that practitioners be both from Europe and educated in Europe in order just to work in New Caledonia. So this proposal that they're trying to get through at the moment, this would make it so you only need to be educated in Europe, but you don't have to be from Europe. So sounds a little bit confusing, but I think it would definitely free some things up a little bit.
Yes, it's very interesting the way the system works. When I was in New Caledonia, I was actually living with two nurses who came from France, from mainland France. Obviously, New Caledonia is considered a territory of France, so it's considered a part of Europe. But as far as I know, there aren't any established, you know, big healthcare universities and places that people can study. A lot of them do go back to France to get their education and then back to New Caledonia. And then you have a lot of French people coming from France all the way from Europe to work in New Caledonia. And I actually have a friend of mine, a journalist called Julian Sartre, who's looking at, so if you're getting workers from overseas, you have to bump up the wages to make it worth their while, because obviously it's very expensive to make the trip over. It's a lot of time. And my friend Julian is actually looking at what impact this has on the local economies, the local peoples, to have these wages a lot higher. So I can understand why the government is looking, I guess, as you're saying, Kyle, to change things and try and get, you know, people who don't just live and study in Europe to work there in New Caledonia in the healthcare.
Yeah, field. And from a local standpoint, it seems a bit unfair for somebody who might, from the Pacific, who might want to be a doctor but doesn't want to, you know, study too far from home or even work too far from home. And New Caledonia could offer a place to do that, and you can't in a lot of ways.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Even those in Australia. So we'll see whether that law passes and what effects that might have in New Caledonia. Now let's head to Samoa, because a curator of the Harvard University's museum is also there to learn about Samoan artifacts. Why is that?
Yeah, so her name is Dr. Ingrid Algren. She heads up the Museum of Archaeology and Anthology at the Harvard University, probably the most famous university in the world in a lot of ways, speaking of schools. So that's home to hundreds of artifacts taken from the Pacific sort of way back in the mid-1800s. And these are things collected and brought back from people like traders and missionaries who traveled through there during those times. And you know, they brought back things like canoes, clothing, instruments, even game pieces, pretty much all of which were from Samoa and American Samoa. However, the museum doesn't have a ton of information about their exact origins. So Dr. Ingrid is actually in the country at the moment to find out those things so she can better tell their stories.
Okay, find out more information, not necessarily bring the artifacts back, which I know is a big controversial issue affecting many Pacific countries. But she doesn't want to find out more information. How will she exactly do that?
Yeah, so she's going to be teaming up with the Center of Samoan Studies to carry out some of her research in hopes of just pinpointing their exact origins and things like what they're used for and stuff like that. And so she's in Samoa now. We'll travel to American Samoa next. And I imagine with all that newfound information, she'll be able to get back to Harvard and maybe provide a better exhibition, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. I wonder what the plaques say at the moment. You know, those little things that explain the artwork. Yeah. Perhaps they're like completely off. Yeah, I can imagine.
If you have any photos, send them through. We'd love
yes,
to see.
Yes, indeed. Yes, please do get in touch with us with ABC Pacific. And if you have any stories about like artifacts that you think that should perhaps return home, I'm very interested in that subject and would love to find out more. Now, let's head to Hawaii. We've been seeing images. I don't know if you've seen them, Kyle. They're like spectacular images of the volcano erupting. I believe it's one of the biggest in the world. Do head online, listeners, if you haven't seen them yet. It's pretty amazing, this lava flowing out, bright orange. But now, the United States has deployed armed forces for the volcano. Why is that?
Yeah, that's right. So the National Guard has actually been activated in Hawaii to keep citizens away from some of that lava flow, which is creeping within 2 miles from a major highway over there at the moment. So CNN says it's a major highway that actually connects the east and west of the island, so it's very heavily used. So at the moment, there's about 20 National Guard members that are undertaking traffic control operations to essentially keep people away.
Oh, wow. So is there any risks to the public because of this?
No immediate risk, but it's really just the visuals that are drawing a lot of people out of their home and just want to take a closer look. You know, as you said before, it's, you know, some incredible apocalyptic scenes almost. And I'm sure if I was there, I'd be wanting to get a front row seat to it as well. So at the moment, the lava is advancing about 21 to 22 yards per hour. So it sounds pretty slow, but I'm sure it's one of those things that once it's in your path, nothing really stops it.
Yeah. How much is a yard? That's like 30 centimeters, isn't it?
Yeah.
So 22 yards is quite fast, I reckon. Yeah.
I guess depending on how big your legs are, maybe.
You know? Yeah, that's true. Yes, you might be able to outrun the lava, but I wouldn't recommend it. It can be quite destructive. But you no need to do that. There are some amazing videos. I even saw like a live stream of the lava flowing out of the volcano there. So, yes, do stay safe. Now, Kyle, I've actually got some news for you, or I will have some news for you.
Here we go. We're going off script.
Yes.
Hold on to your seats.
Well, do you know Pacific Break that just wrapped up? The judges got hundreds of submissions from 15 countries, and I don't think you know, but I know who the winner is. Do you know the winner?
I don't yet, no.
I've got some news for you. We'll be finding out the winner very shortly, probably in about 15 or so minutes. I'll actually be giving them a call to announce the news. So they don't know, or they didn't know until I gave the call. I will tell you that it did happen a short time ago. So do stick around for that, Kyle. Yes, where the tables will turn, and I'll be giving you some news from the region.
All right, I won't go anywhere. Can't wait.
That was Kyle Evans bringing us some news around the region. And yes, as I said, do stick around in about 15 or so minutes, we'll find out the winner of the region's biggest music competition, that's Pacific Break. That'll be coming up right after this short break.
Join me, Hilda Wayne, for Sisters Let's Talk. I'll be interviewing incredible guests and discussing issues that are in the hearts and minds of Pacific women.
When you're younger, you don't really take note of the significance of this ritual until you're much older. Then you realize that you're proud to be part of this ritual.
So join me, Hilda Wayne, for Sisters Let's Talk. Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
You're listening to Pacific Beat. I'm your host, Priyanka Srinivasan. Hope you're having a nice and easy Thursday morning. Now to some sports news. You might not know, but the most successful NRL club for the past 2 decades have been the Melbourne Storm. But their achievements are not really reflected at a grassroots level in their home state where Aussie rules football dominates. That's in Victoria, where I'm speaking to you now. Only a handful of players here have come through the system in Victoria and made it onto the Storm's list. But it appears the popularity of rugby league is growing, particularly in country areas, and that's driven, for the most part, by seasonal workers from the Pacific. As Gillian Area discovered when she went to visit the Stawell Mounties to find out how they're faring in what is their debut season.
The Stawell Mounties rugby league team in Western Victoria are preparing to host their first home fixture. Donning their light blue and red jerseys, they're playing in the Limestone Coast League against other Victorian and South Australian clubs some 3 hours away. Mountie skipper Taylor Langwell said finding players in the regional town near the birthplace of Aussie rules was initially difficult.
It's been hard in a predominant AFL state, especially in a predominant AFL town where rugby has never been a thing before. We were having consistently maybe 4 to 9 people show up each time, but once we started properly training and we started to get more like jerseys, the word went around and then all of these boys came out of the woodworks to the point where we've actually had to close our registrations because we have too many players.
Their lock, Stores Ualesi, grew up in Samoa before coming to Victoria to work for a local manufacturer making electrical parts for trucks, trains and planes.
My dad is a rugby player, so it's always in my blood. It's always fun to play. Since I was young, I don't really have the chance to play and develop the talents. I know it's in me because I'm the only boy that my dad rely on for things to be done at home, even my mum. Because I'm from a small family, I'm the oldest of two.
Eventually, Mr. Ualesi did get the opportunity to play and went on to represent Samoa in the under-17s against Fiji. Now, he's been able to bring those skills to the team.
They've been huge for us. They've all got experience, all in rugby union, but we've slowly changed that over into league. And, I mean, it shows on the field. We put, 66-12 on a team in our very first season as a club. So, and this is an established team that we've beaten as well.
Fast forward a couple of months and the club is now top of their league thanks to the collective experience of its migrant players. For Mounties fullback Iosefo Katirewa, rugby is life.
It runs in the blood. It has been there for me since I was small. And playing out in the field, it means a lot to me and keeps me going.
The majority of its players hail from the Pacific nations, fulfilling chronic labour shortages on Australian farms, abattoirs and manufacturers. The government's Pacific Australia Labour Migration Program has recruited more than 26,000 temporary workers across the country who are encouraged to build connections through sport and volunteerism in their host community. Warrnambool Raiders coach Jonathan Hukutai has seen the Limestone Coast League grow over the past few years with players from the Pacific Islands.
There was Horsham in the comp before we got there, and then within 2 or 3 years there was 3 teams out of Warrnambool which came through the Raiders, some of them. So we got the Gundajamara Bulls, which is a local team from Warrnambool too. So we've got 2 teams out of Warrnambool in the Limestone competition at the moment. We've got a lot of mixture of heaps of cultures like Tongan, Fijians and Australians. Anyone who wants to learn, most welcome.
Brent Silver, NRL Victoria's general manager, says there are about 600 registered rugby league players in the regions.
In that 5-year period leading up to pandemic, there was a 50% growth in participation in the regional area.
Leagues also operate in Sunraysia and the Goulburn Murray, where players from Pacific Islands are overrepresented.
We're talking high 80%, and some teams will be 100% have Maori Pacifica heritage registered players. So whether they're born there or their parents born there or their grandparents were born there, we capture that data at registration point.
For many players, the club also serves as a home away from home.
All of those boys have come from the islands. They've left their families behind, and we kind of wanted to put something together for them as well to give them that camaraderie, that brothership, that sense of family being so far away. Also, it's a bit daunting for some of them coming into this culture being so different to the islands. So, you know, this gives them a bit of common ground where they can socialise with each other.
With the Samoan brothers, we come from the islands, and the bond in the team is really good.
It's like a really a good opportunity. Like, I can learn from them. They have different way to play the game. I have different way I play my game. So we put that together, and that's where we grow as a team.
Back in Stawell, the Mounties are preparing for the semi-finals against Mount Gambier's Blue Lake Knights.
Watch out. Mounties on the way, and we cannot wait to play more games and do what we love.
Us boys, eh? Yeah, let's get in tight and go Mounties, eh?
Go Mounties!
Let's get on!
Yes, well, good luck to the Mounties. And that reporter there in Western Victoria was Gillian Area. You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. Is the future of Pacifica art in virtual reality? This question and more is being explored at the Art Gallery of New South Wales as part of a Pacifica community event this weekend. The exhibition, which includes art, performances and Talanoa sessions, is co-produced with Leo Tanoi, a Sydney-based curator, performer and community leader.
There's a lot of our people learning a lot about augmented reality. They're also using artificial intelligence. With the COVID and the disruptions over the last 2 to 3 years, the arts sector kind of like moved to online and digital. So there was a lot more representation of works in this space. And it's a kind of like a new frontier where looking to discuss with the artists, particularly Alan Vili and Katrina Yosia from New Zealand, whereabouts does that sit within the community, in the New Zealand artist community? And we're wanting to see also where that would sit with Pacific artists here in New South Wales and in different states using these new technologies.
As you've just mentioned, a lot of artists have moved online and into the digital space. Can you maybe describe to us what that looks like for those of our listeners who might not know?
Digital space, because of the disruptions in COVID and everything, you know, a lot of the programming, the traditional programming is people program at cultural facilities, they curate shows and people come into the galleries and that, you know, during the last 2-3 years of disruptions, that wasn't possible. So therefore, cultural programming was moved naturally online. And then I guess the build up from that is people were probably sitting there, you know, trying to find other ways of communicating, but I guess that's the only platform that was available.
And has that influenced the art as well?
From my personal experience of the disruptions and digital going online, I'm not quite sure if for everybody, but as a creative producer working, it has been, it's really nice to have the presence online. Maybe the reach is going further than normal, the traditional sort of setup in terms of in the galleries. But I believe now that digital, it has an avenue to reach further in terms of meeting people. It takes away that face-to-face, you know, that sort of warmer sort of meeting people and working with people. So luckily we're slowly coming back to, you know, the norm pre-COVID.
And how does VR and, you know, these other more digital forms of art, how popular is that among Pacifica artists?
I think all the digital formats, AI, AR, VR, they are becoming a bit more sort of tech savvy. And I think people are at that point where they're, you know, probably forced and looking into, you know, different ways of finding reach, I think. And if they can use NFTs, for example, to better for all purposes, financial or planning or programming, I think it's slowly moving towards digital. So whoever can jump on now and understand it and use it, I think it's just going to be part of the natural landscape in the next, you know, 5 years, 5 to 10 years. So I'm hoping that with our Pacific artists and exposing them to different types of organizations that are looking after these tech, that we could work things out and kind of like pass it on to other Pacific artists as we're looking to build sort of like associations of artists to work with each other and share whatever knowledge we have.
Talking about NFTs or non-fungible tokens, can you maybe for our listeners explain what they are, and do you think they are the future for Pacific artists?
NFTs is something that I just, to be honest, as a creative producer, curator within the art space, specializing in Pacific, a good friend rang me up and said, do you know what an NFT is? And I was just thinking, is that a new bikie gang out west or something? He said, no, it's to do with art. So I started talking to people about NFTs and trying my best to understand it. But I think one way of explaining it is that if you have a digital file of music and you purchase something off, for example, a digital file off iTunes, and then you own that song, that song, you can actually copy it onto different computers, onto different phones. You can share them, and that when it comes to an artwork, a visual picture, or a music file, they have what is called this big keyword or service, which is called blockchain. And so the blockchain disallows you to copy it. Therefore, the artwork is a one-off owned by one person. So that's the kind of like a doorway introduction into what NFT does. But the other services within the framework of NFTs, I'm still learning myself. In terms of whether this is going to be part of the metaphysical real world moving forward, I suspect that it's going to be up and down, and people will be slowly getting into it. And just like the introduction of the email, there's all these new technologies that are that they are saying that is going to help us in terms of finances and in terms of making things easier to communicate. So that is still there's a lot of waiting around to find out as more studies and research and a lot of data comes in about that. But I suspect that with technology in general, I suspect that we are going to be moving towards NFTs and the digital space having a bigger influence in life around art and culture, and how it's disseminated and how it's purchased and how it reaches people.
And for those that aren't in Sydney, can they tune in somehow, or is it a physical event only?
Yeah, it's more a physical event, and for people to come here. And in the future, I believe they'll be doing a lot more live streaming.
That was Leo Tenoy in Sydney speaking there to Dubrovka Volodya. You're listening to Pacific Beat. I hope you're having a lovely Thursday morning. And as you might know, Pacific Break, the region's biggest music competition, has wrapped up. We received hundreds of entries from 15 countries across the Pacific. And that made it tough work for the judges. They had to decide the winner from so many incredible original tracks. But an artist has been crowned. So I'm proud to announce that the winner of Pacific Break 2022 is, drumroll please, it is Danielle from Papua New Guinea. She won with her powerful track Fight, inspired by the West Papuans' ongoing fight for independence. I broke the news to Danielle earlier. Hi, is that Danielle?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Danielle. This is Priyanka. I'm from ABC Radio Australia's Pacific Beat. Now, I have some good news for you, Danielle. Congratulations. You are the winner of Pacific Break 2022. Congratulations. How do you feel?
I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. I mean, it's a big moment here, and yes, your award-winning song was called Fight. I'll give you a moment, but it sounds there that you're quite surprised and overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, actually, I am. Oh my gosh, I wasn't expecting it. Honestly. Wow. I didn't prepare myself for this. But wow.
Yes.
Yeah, this is huge.
I know you've just found out. Why don't we go back and take you back? What made you want to apply to Pacific Break in the first place?
So basically when I first heard about Pacific Break, it was through Springer Mech, and, you know, it just looked like such a great opportunity and a great platform to share music. So I thought, you know, I'll give it a shot. When I saw it come around again, the time I saw it pop up on Facebook, and I thought, okay, I'll, you know, submit it. And the Fight song, I was actually one of my first singles, but I wasn't very happy with the quality. So I thought, I'll redo it and submit it. And then when we did redo it, I was so much more happier with the quality. And I thought, okay, I'll send that through. So, yeah, I mean, just making it into the finals was enough of an achievement for me. I was more than happy with just that, you know. But, I mean, getting this is, it means so much to me, 'cause it's been a really hard road.
I can hear are there some people around you there that we can hear,
yeah,
as well.
Oh yeah, I've got my other sister through music, Mariani Masani, has come down. So yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't know what else to say. This is just such a blessing.
Oh my God.
Well, congratulations so much, Danielle. I can hear in your voice that it does mean a lot to you. And I want to tell you, the judges were so impressed by the song that you did submit, Fight, as you said, and the power and the emotion that comes through that song as well. Can you tell us a bit about what went into making that song, why you did want to put so much emotion into that prize-winning now song?
So initially when I wrote Fight, it was inspired by West Papua and their fight for freedom. And when I redid it, because we're having a lot of, you know, issues in PNG right now with tribal fights and just social problems. So I think it was more like I, you know, thinking of West Papua, but then also my own country, and singing that song. That's where the emotion, I think, came through for it, because, you know, we're just in a place right now where the time right now in PNG is so hard for a lot of people. So that's basically what pushed me to sort of give my best on the second take of the song.
Danielle, you are the winner now, so I don't know if you know, but as part of your prize, you'll be heading to Australia, to Adelaide, to perform at WOM Adelaide. It's Australia's biggest, largest international music festival. How do you feel about that?
Oh, my God. I'm just blessed. I can't even, yeah. I mean, it kind of solidifies, you know, why we kept pushing, even though sometimes I really wanted to give up on the music. So, yeah, you don't realize how timely this is for me.
Can you tell us a bit more about that? What has been your journey to becoming a musician there in Papua New Guinea?
Well, I actually, like, I've been in and out of the music scene for a while, but back in 2018 when I had a bit of a personal hiccup, I should say, I decided to sort of dive into music a bit more and, like, really, you know, push myself, just because it was like therapy for me. And, you know, there were so many times when I just thought, what's the point in doing this? Because I kept hitting roadblocks and, getting a lot of criticism as well, because I'm a mom and then, I'm a big girl. And my music, when it started was very shaky, I suppose. I was new to the scene. But I think a lot of times I sort of questioned if I should just, let it go. But now, like with this happening, it's kind of the answer I've been praying for, I guess.
Oh, well, congratulations. I mean, it sounds like it means a lot to you. And hearing about that hard road, Pacific Break is the largest music competition in the region. And you're representing Papua New Guinea, I guess, as a PNG artist. What does it mean to be an artist in PNG to you?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, being able to, like, represent my home, that itself is an achievement I didn't think I was going to do, anytime soon. I thought it would happen maybe, 10 years. That was on my timeline. But it's happening quicker than I thought. And I'm just blessed. I really am. There's no words to describe what I'm feeling right now.
But full power to you as well, Danielle. I mean, it was because of your voice, your vocals, and that powerful message that you had through your song that impressed the judges so much. And so much so, I don't know if you know this, Danielle, but you're actually the first female winner of Pacific Break ever in the history of the competition. I mean, how do you feel about that, this historic win, and representing female musicians across the Pacific?
You're taking me on a roller coaster ride right now.
I didn't mean to, Danielle, but it is big news.
Oh my gosh, that's even like, oh man, to be able to represent like women, especially on this sort of platform. That's an achievement, I guess, especially considering, how hard it can be for a woman in PNG and the Pacific, with a lot of the cultural stuff and all of that. So it's a real, real big achievement.
Yes.
So thank you guys so much.
Achievement is an understatement, I think, Danielle. I know you are surprised and shocked by being crowned Pacific Break winner. What do you think you'll do once we're off the phone, once things have settled down? What's the first thing you'll do?
I'm going to try and stop crying. That's the first thing. probably maybe call the family. Especially Dad, because he's not here right now. He's back at home. I'm in my home province, so yeah, I'm sure he'd be really happy to hear the news.
Yes, what an exciting day, I guess it'll be for you and your family. All the very best, Danielle.
Yeah.
I can hear in your voice that this means a lot to you, and your song also means a lot. The message in the song, as you explained, is so strong. We'll be playing it here on Pacific Beat on this show very shortly. But I wonder, are you able to sing us a few bars a cappella down the line? Do you have it in you, Danielle?
Yes, sure. I'll try.
If you can. We'd love to hear it.
Might be very croaky, but I'll try. The cold is creeping in and I can't stop thinking, when will the people see their freedom? You preach about this peace and unity. Is that okay?
That is beautiful. Thank you so much, Danielle, and congratulations on this win, becoming the winner of Pacific Break 2022, the first female winner of Pacific Break ever in the history of the competition. Congratulations and all the very best. Can't wait to see you in Womadelaide.
Thank you so much.
That was Danielle. Oh, and what a beautiful voice. Let's actually take a listen to more of that amazing, amazing voice. We'll be hearing that winning, prize-winning song from Danielle from PNG. She is the Pacific Breaks 2022 winner. Before we do listen to the song, I just want to thank Danielle and also to all the entrants. I mean, like I said, we had hundreds of entries from 15 countries across the Pacific. Pacific Break was on hold for 2 years, but it was just so fabulous for us here at ABC Radio Australia to see that there's so much enthusiasm for this competition. So thank you to all the entrants. Do try again. We'll have it again next year if all things go to plan. So let's take a listen to this year's winning song. It's Fight by Danielle. an amazing track that is. You can see why she was crowned Pacific Breaks from Papua New Guinea 2022 winner. That was Danielle with her winning track Fight. Congratulations to her for such a big accomplishment. As we mentioned, she's the first female artist from the Pacific to win Pacific Break in the competition's history. It's pretty amazing, and she'll be performing at Womb Adelaide next year. It's Australia's biggest international music festival. So good luck to her, and also good luck to all our finalists. We had entrants from 15 countries across the Pacific, and quite a lot of them were represented in the 12 finalists as well. Head on to ABC Pacific's Facebook page to find out who they were. There's representation from Fiji, from Solomon Islands, from New Caledonia, from Timor-Leste, from Federated States of Micronesia. It's really a lot, but congratulations and thank you again to Danielle for her winning track. And if you do want to hear more, if you missed out on the interview with her where I announced that she had won, you can head online to ABC Pacific's website. You can search it and find us there and listen to that interview. It was really touching. Rarely interviews bring me to tears, but that one certainly did.